somewhere else.
Mexico.
I'm in Timor.
Most pieces that CA get to our Pacific neighbours, I mean, are you implying that there's some sort of corruption there, or is it just simply wayward processes?
No, what I'm saying is that we just haven't thought hard enough about how we can get every possible dollar to the intended recipients. And it's in the nature of bureaucracies worldwide, not just ones in the government sector, but ones in the NGO sector as well, that they'll capture resources on the way through. Every now and then someone needs to go and have another look at how well we're doing in that respect. That's what we're doing here.
The 280...
So why wouldn't you set of bureaucrats do a better job than the old lot?
Oh, look, I think that this is a slow process. It'll take place under the leadership of the chief executive of the ministry, and I confidently expect that there'll be quite good gains to be made over time. But what we've got to do is keep the machinery moving. We don't want to break the machinery that we actually need to deliver for us, either in the NZAID operations or amongst the NGOs who are very important partners.
The 271 staff at New Zealand Aid, will they be retained?
Oh, that's a matter entirely for the chief executive, as it always is.
What do you say to critics who sort of say this is a way of politicisation, you know, the carrot and stick sort of mentality with our Pacific neighbours?
Well, I think I've made pretty clear today what I mean when I say that we want to align our aid expenditure with our overall foreign policy goals, most importantly in the Pacific. That means that we want to align our aid and trade policies, and we're actually well down the track towards doing that. Tim Grosser and I were in Australia meeting our counterparts 2 weeks ago, and we're meeting trade ministers from the Pacific in the next few days. We're taking that process forward in tandem, and I think that's a very important alignment.
You're talking there about aligning it more to economic growth rather than simple poverty elimination, and you touched on private enterprise. Does that mean that more New Zealand aid will be going into private companies in a lot of these countries?
No, it doesn't mean that. What it means is that that's an important part of the package. If you go and talk to leaders in Pacific nations, they'll tell you they're trying to constrain the growth of their public sectors to give room for the private sectors to flourish. But of course, they need some tools to make that happen. And in particular, microfinancing type initiatives are quite important. Prime Minister Rudd in Australia has identified the same thing, and it's a very important emphasis in their Partnerships for Development program, with which we align our aid programs here.
But could we have on the Pacific? At the moment, we give about half of our aid budget to the Pacific. What percentage will we be talking about now?
Oh, it's going to increase, but look, we'll take that carefully over time, and that's a matter that we work through with the chief executive and his senior staff, as well as with the NGOs and people in the field.
So we're talking perhaps three quarters of our budget.
I think you can confidently say there's going to be not just an increase in the total budget, which there will be significantly, but also a significant shift of resources over time into our region.
You referred there to the self-appointed people who are managing this budget at the moment. Who are you talking about there?
Oh, I'm talking about some people who've put their heads up to criticise the process from a position of very obvious self-interest. Some people think this is their money. I want to remind them it's taxpayers' money that taxpayers donate to some of the poorest people in the world, and they want to see as much of that money as possible actually get to them.
You can address this on trade and tourism figures. What about old-fashioned measures like access to clean water or education?
Of course, those things are important too, and we can look at a range of other statistics in health and education, which we'll also be measuring as we always do.
Are you confident that there are going to be important programs like that will stay?
Oh, yes. Look, we're not going to de-emphasise health and education and the other services that we put money into. What we are going to do is try and build a new dimension of economic activity, hopefully employment sustainability into these factors as well.
Fiji, Frank Bainimarama is apparently seeking a meeting with Mr. Key and Mr. Rudd. Are you aware of that?
I'm aware that the Australian papers are reporting that today. I don't imagine that either Mr. Rudd or Mr. Key have been rushing to clear their diaries.
Why not? Why shouldn't they meet Bainimarama? He's willing to talk now, it seems.
Well, Mr. Bainimarama has been ready to talk plenty of times in the past, and then either not turned up or let down the people he's talked to. You've talked to Prime Minister Tuilapa in Samoa, Prime Minister Savelli in Tonga. They went in to try and assist and then got sawed off at the back of the knees. We've seen the United Nations Secretariat and the Commonwealth Secretariat engage in good faith in a process of dialogue, trying to assist with the presidential dialogue in Fiji. He just cut them off at the pass as well. I think that Prime Ministers Key and Rudd will be able to assess the sort of treatment they're likely to get.
How would you say then that they'll be suspended tonight?
Well, the process is an automatic one, so I expect that the Secretariat will advise the Chair of the Forum. The Chair of the Forum, Premier Talangi from Niue, is likely to make an announcement in the next couple of days, I would say.
So, Minister, is the time for dialogue now gone? I mean, has Bainimarama sort of burnt his bridges in that respect?
No, but I think that he should expect that people are going to treat him with a degree of caution. They know that they can contact us if they want to make progress at any time. They've got my telephone number. I'm sure that the same goes for Australian Minister Stephen Smith. But as I say, plenty of people have been burnt in that process, and so you'd expect people to be cautious in treating any invitation to have discussions.
He said in that interview this morning that elections in Fiji will be held by September 2014. Is that good enough?
Well, he also said that there'd be elections in Fiji by March of 2009.
So you don't place obviously credence.
I place absolutely as much trust in the commitment to having elections in 2014 as I place in the commitment that he made to having elections in March 2009.
What do you think tangibly will come out of Fiji being suspended from the forum? Will they care? Will it make any difference?
Oh, well, they certainly pretend not to, but I think it's just one of those areas that we just need to take things forward carefully. My own view is that we've got to stop treating this as a contest between us and them, where we have to get them to submit. We just have to wait. If they don't want to have elections, they're not going to have them. If they want to wreck their economy, they're going to. All the international community can do is say we're prepared to be patient, we'll be there to help when the time comes.
Given that you have concerns about the Fijian economy, does that mean we may re-look at the aid that we're giving to Fiji?
Well, the aid that we give to Fiji is through NGOs at the moment, and I don't think we have any issues around that. I think that Fiji needs a lot more help than they're getting at the moment. The Fijian economy is in serious difficulty, and it's very sad for the people of Fiji that help's not going to be forthcoming until they change their ways. And you know, most notably, the European Union has withheld its sugar subsidies. Those are significant amounts of money that would benefit a lot of people in Fiji.
In terms of the economy, Bainimarama said in that interview on Sky today that it wasn't ailing as any result of a political crisis, but it was simply negative reporting by media. What do you make of that?
Yes, well, it seems to be a great deal of negative reporting around Fiji at the moment, and perhaps the Commonwealth needs to ask himself whether there's a reason for that.
Has there been any suspended? Will there be any kind of communication with Fiji from the New Zealand government or the Pacific Forum?
Oh, look, we've got an open mind about that, quite frankly. Look, we will see the suspension go ahead in sorrow, not in anger. We're looking for a way of seeing them return to the international community, to following a path towards democracy, and to seeing their economy recover, and we'll be around to help them. And yes, there'll be some times when I'm sure that we'll need to have some informal dialogue, and perhaps something more than that. We'll just have to judge when those times are appropriate. We're certainly not closing any doors in that respect.
So will the forum need to meet ahead of the next Cairns meeting?
I don't know of any intention for the forum to meet. There's a possibility that some foreign ministers and possibly all foreign ministers from the forum will be asked to have some discussions. We're just waiting for an indication from the leadership on that, and I think we probably will get one sometime after the suspension occurs.
China supports Fiji very much, the Fiji regime.
I'm sorry?
China supports the Fiji regime very much. You know?
I'm aware that China has offered some words of comfort and possibly some more substantial assistance as well, but I've also seen that the Chinese leadership has issued a statement when Mr. Key was in town suggesting that Fiji should listen to its neighbours, and I take that as a very positive sign of the attitude of the Chinese administration, one which is showing that they understand their responsibilities here. That's again a matter for the leaders to determine, there are two dimensions to that. The first is obviously the question of whether it's appropriate to have the forum secretariat, which is supposed to uphold the principles of the rule of law and democracy, housed in a place where the elected government's been overthrown and the constitution abrogated. That's something that the leaders of the forum will no doubt want to think about in good time. The more pressing issue would be if there were constraints on the ability of the secretariat to operate properly and to hold the meetings that they're obliged to hold with people flying in from around the region. I'm very hopeful that we'll see the Fiji interim government understand the importance of allowing the secretariat to continue to operate, reduce any pressure for the secretariat to be relocated, and provide everyone with incentives to find a constructive way forward.
So is there a preference for it to stay there in Suva?
I don't think it will help anyone if we rush into a decision on that matter. It's a matter for the forum leaders to consider, and their hands in this matter would only be forced if there was some suggestion that the Secretariat couldn't operate credibly and safely where it is. So I hope that's a matter that the forum leaders can consider properly and over time.
Are you saying that Fiji's pushing to get the Secretariat down to Suva?
No, I'm not. I'm saying that we should just try and make sure that we don't rush into decisions here. I want to see the forum leaders given plenty of opportunity to consider these things going forward.
How aware are you of Fiji's wrangling behind the scenes to try and stay in the forum?
Look, I read newspapers. I see that the Attorney General has an active PR program, but I wouldn't get too excited about what the Attorney General has to say about these matters.
Now, a number of academics are saying that what Frank Panimarama, while he's not doing it in the way that is ideal, that is it, by the point of a gun, that his objectives are to basically rid the country of corruption and that he actually has some worthy aims. I mean, aside from the whole thing with the coup and its illegal status, I mean, what do you make of those intentions?
Well, what I'll say is that both the United Nations and the Commonwealth Secretariats gave them the benefit of the doubt in that respect and were prepared to go along with a role superintending the presidential dialogue, hopeful that they'd be able to come out the other end with some agreed changes to the Constitution and a way forward to legitimacy. Now, they got let down, and I think you can draw your own conclusions from that. 4, 1, 2, 3.